All right, good evening. Welcome once again to Mitzvah of the Week. This is actually going to be the last Mitzvah of the Week Shir. I think I began somewhere by Chanan or something like that last summer. So we'll do some Tisha B'Av stuff next week, and the week after also will be connected to Tisha B'Av. And then you'll get a little bit of a break for me for a couple of weeks. And then, believe it or not, it'll be time to talk about Elul Rosh Hashanah. We'll already be on the horizon. So start by talking about January 1st. Feels like January 1st is the wrong direction, right? We're actually close to Rosh Hashanah. But January 1st, New Year's Day, often associated with resolutions. And at this time, people are wondering, you know, what do I want to change? What do I want to improve in my life? So let's just start with this. Who here has made a New Year's resolution before? No, not everyone's on camera, but many of us have made New Year's resolutions before. The source of this association, actually, according to an article by Arthur Brooks on The Atlantic, is associated with the ancient Romans. The ancient Romans, when the new year started, they would tell one of their gods, Janus, which I guess is probably where January comes from. So they would promise to be better during this time, which is not so dissimilar from what our Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is like, although with us, it's not a Avodah Zarah, but be it as it may, they promise to be better, and perhaps that's a source for New Year's resolutions. Now, according to Arthur Brooks, the most common resolutions that people make have to do with things related to things financial in nature, maybe a little bit health-related, diets, exercising, and the like. I think for us, we might throw in Daf Yomi. In fact, it's probably interesting because last year, 2020, so New Year's Day was a Siyum HaShas, or it was around New Year's Day. So that was probably a time that people were thinking about making commitment to Daf Yomi, improvement in a particular mitzvah. So, of course, we can intuitively guess that not everybody keeps those resolutions, right? Next question we could ask is, you know, how many people actually keep those resolutions, right? So there's some research that says that by June, less than 50% are still in action. So that's okay. It's not great, but 50% is not a lot. But there's some statistics that say that it's as little as 6%. 6%. Not a lot. And gym membership.
You froze, Rabbi.
What? I froze? What was the last thing you heard me say? Jonah heard it all. Now I can tell. All right, so we're resuming a little bit mid-recording because of some Wi-Fi issues. I'm not connected to a hotspot, so hopefully that won't be an issue. And hopefully I just joined my in-law's family plan, so hopefully my mother-in-law won't take too much notice of this hotspot situation. But anyway, so we said that 50%, according to some statistics, are still in action in June, which is okay. That's not so bad. But according to some statistics, it's as little as 6% are still carrying through with their New Year's resolutions as late as June. And then if we go to a classic example, gym membership. So a lot of people join gyms around January 1st. So gym membership apparently declines when people stop coming already in the third week of January. And after 8 months, about half stop coming. And then you can imagine by December 31st, they're probably looking forward for the clock to turn January 1st. So this leads into an important question. Should we be taking these resolutions if we are so unlikely to follow through with them? Because one question, of course, is the value of them. But beyond that, it brings us into a fascinating discussion of Nidarim and Shvuos, about vows and resolutions and oaths, which is something that's covered in this week's Parsha. So there are four things that Mirtz Hashem, time permitting, we'll hopefully cover. Number one, the Torah's views of Nidarim in general. Talk a little bit about the methods of annulling. We'll talk about practical matters related to Hataras Nidarim, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and the like, and things related to Minhagim, personal actions, and how those play into all this. But before this, we get to all this. Let's understand a little bit about the view of Nidarim in the Torah. So, get a little bit into the sources here. So, if we look at Sefer Dvarim, let's ignore Parsha Sefer Bamidbar for a second, but Parsha Kitetze, it says, Kitidor Neder Lashem Elokecha, Lo Tacher L'Shalom. When you make a vow to your God, do not put off fulfilling it. Yidarosh Yidreshenu Hashem, for the Lord your God will require it of you. And it seems like he'll demand something of you. He'll, what's that word I'm looking for? He'll come after you for it, so to speak. And you will sinned. But if you don't vow at all, then you have no sin. There's no risk. It's a risk-free situation. And then Tark goes on by saying, Motzas fatecha tishmor. You must fulfill what has crossed your lips. You must fulfill what has crossed your lips and perform what you have voluntarily vowed to the Lord your God. Okay, so we have two things. Three things. On the one hand, maybe better not to vow at all. On the other hand, if you're going to say something, and here this pasuk doesn't say nidarecha tishmor, it says musas fatecha, things that come out of your mouth, which maybe has an implication, doesn't matter. It's a neder, it's a shvua, is there anything that comes out of your mouth, you have to keep. And then, of course, an exhortation not to delay. Don't delay. And Rashi says when it comes to don't delay, three regalim. You have three festivals to do it. So that's neither here nor there for now. But so it gives us, Rashi gives us a little bit of a time frame for this. So it doesn't have to be tomorrow, but don't put it off a whole year, let's say. But that's what we have in Baruch. And Kohelet, a little bit stronger. Kasher tidor neder l'elokim, al techer l'shalmo. Just like we saw in Dvarim, when you make a vow to God, do not delay fulfilling it. Kein chefetz bak si'ili v'tasher tidor shalem. Hashem doesn't want fools, or doesn't take pleasure in fools. So the implication is that people who just say, I'm gonna, so that's foolish. You're not going to be foolish. You're going to be wise, so you're going to think about what you're vowing, and you're going to do it. But then, the really bull part, Tov asher lo tidor mishi tidor velo teshalem. Better not to vow at all than to vow and not fulfill. Which is not necessarily, that's kind of related to what we saw in Pasuk Kaf Gimel. So a little bit of a parallel here. But this is a very strong formulation. Right, you might wonder, is it better to make a vow and fulfill it, or to not vow with the possibility that if you vow, maybe you won't fulfill it? And this is telling you better not to take the vow at all. And this is echoed in the Medrash in Koheles. Rabbi Meir says, Tov mishenu noder kol ikar. Better are those who do not make any vows whatsoever. Alamevi keeps atol azar ushachta. That it's better to just bring the lamb to, let's say we're talking about korbanos here. Somebody says, I'm going to bring a korban next yontif. So just do it. Exactly, Jonah. Just do it. Just bring the lamb and do it. You don't have to make a vow about it. So Rabbi Huda says, so better, the better thing to do is to make the vow and do it. And there's a pasuk that says, nidru v'shalmu. That it's good to make a vow and fulfill. That's a pasuk in Tehillim. So you have a little bit of a tension here, and all of this based in psukim. Rabbi Meir representing the idea that if there's any risk you're not going to fulfill the vow, better not to do it at all. Rabbi Huda says, well, if you can take the vow and commit yourself to doing something and do it, so matovu manai. It's a wonderful thing to do. So just to get really practical, of course, there's masechet adar, masechet shvuot. We could be here a whole year discussing, or two or three, discussing matters related to Nedarim. But let's get really practical. What the Shulchan Aruch gives us some sage advice about Nedarim. First thing he says, I'll tell you, regular Nedarim. Don't be somebody who is irregular in making vows. Don't be accustomed to doing it. And then he says, Kol Noder Afa Pishim Kaimo Nikra Rasha Nikra Chote. Somebody who vows, even if he fulfills it, is considered to be wicked and a sinner, right? Which is a very different tone than Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that if you take a vow and you do it, so that's amazing. Shulchan Aruch says, if you take a vow and you fulfill it, you're wicked. You're wicked. I'll come up to another thing related to that just a second. Then he says, Icher Adam Nidro Pinkaso Niftachad. If somebody delays fulfilling their vow, you're late, right? Which the Torah tells us not to do, don't be late. If you're late and you fulfill your vow, and you don't fulfill your vow, or you're late in fulfilling your vow, I should say. So the notebook is open, meaning Hashem is paying attention to the books, who's signing in. So that's a dangerous situation. Then he goes on to say this is based on the Gemara in the Darim. Hanunderki ilu bone bama b'shas iser habamas. Somebody who makes a vow is like building a bama. Bama are the places where they are places outside the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash where sacrifices take place. There's a whole history about when bamas were allowed or not, but here it's comparing it to a situation where you build a bama when you're not allowed to build it. Bamakaimo, and if you do the vow, so making the vow is like building the bama, and then fulfilling the vow is as if you sacrificed on it. So you sacrificed on it. So then it goes on to say, Shetovio Tereshi Shal Nidra. Once you make the vow, you might as well try to annul it. But somebody who actually carries out the vow, it's like you sacrifice on this forbidden platform, in this forbidden place. So why is that? So it would seem like the reason for this is that the comparison is that in both situations, you think you're doing something spiritual. You think you're doing something good. You think you're making a vow because you're going to do something, or I'm just using vow as an example, but there's obviously different terms we could be using. But you think you're making a vow and you think it's a good thing. But in reality, it's the opposite of what Hashem wants. Right? Same thing with bamos. You think you're doing something spiritual, right? You think you're offering something to Hashem, really, really the opposite. So Shulchan Aruch comes out on the side, really better not to take vows. And even let's say you want to do it for the sake of a mitzvah, right? Which in Shulchan Aruch, we'll continue on the Shulchan Aruch and then we'll go to the Yerushalmi. Shulchan Aruch says, somebody says, Eshna Perigzeh, Yereshem Yisrashel B'davar. So somebody says, I'm going to learn something, but you're worried that if you're not going to quite get it done, forget, you're not going to make the time to do it, and things happen, and time slips. So, Shari Leila Minda Luzuzi Nafshi. So, you're actually allowed to make a vow in order to nudge yourself to do it. So, in this case, you actually are allowed to make a vow. Okay, or if you're concerned that your Yetzer is going to overtake you and you're not going to do a mitzvah, let's say, it could be a positive or negative commandment. So you're worried that you're not going to keep Shabbos properly. So you can make a vow for that purpose. Do you have a question?
Yeah. What if you make the vow and you don't come to it? Then do you get the sin?
Yeah. Well, so that's a sin. That's exactly what the Torah is telling us. Is a sin
for a nudge.
What?
Even if you did the nudge yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the risk. So first of all, just on the subject of things related to mitzvah, so the Yerushalmi says, you know, if you're going to take on a chumrah, so maybe this is, you know, all this is in matters related to just, you know, pushing yourself to actually do mitzvahs. If you're taking on a chumrah, so the Yerushalmi says, lo da'yecha ma she'asra lecha ha'Torah, it's not enough what the Torah forbade you from doing. She'atam v'akesh lesra lecha dar macherim. So you think, let's say a person wants to be machmer, Rav Amital, like to talk about this, Rabbi Mital of Shabbat Har Tzion. So he knows what he said to a student one time. Are you wearing? How big is the begad of your tzitzis? How big is like the actual clothing piece of your tzitzis? And the student said it's a big begad. So there's a discussion halacha. So, you know, how big does a piece of clothing have to be in order to require tzitzis? So the student says, I'm wearing a big one, right? Because he's being machmir like the Mishnah Berurah. Rav Amital says, when I was a yeshiva student, if the Mishnah Berurah said to be machmir in something, you know, if a Baal Nefesh or somebody who's God-fearing should be machmir, we'd look and say, that's not me. I'm just an average person. Now every yeshiva guy thinks that that they have to take on these chumras. So that's an idea based on this Yerushalmi, that it's not enough what the Torah forbade you, that you have to add on more to that. That's another issue. Amabin doesn't make, Shulchan Aruch goes on to say that somebody who takes vows in order to fix certain character traits, in order to fix their way. So this is where you get into things related to health and finances and dieting. And maybe if somebody has an anger problem, so they're taking vows to not get angry. So that's very praiseworthy. So he gives examples of somebody who's a little bit of a glutton or something like that. So maybe you take a vow to refrain yourself from that. And that's, in fact, there's a statement in Pirkei Avos that says, Nedarim siag leprishu, that taking vows is a fence around being pious and separating from problematic behavior and culture and the like. Even though it's work, or even though it's worship of Hashem, so that's the thing, right? If you need to take one, it seems like the Shulchan Aruch is saying, if you need to take one, take it, but don't take too many of them. What's the advice here? Yifrosh b'dvarim sh'ra'ui lifrosh b'hem below neder. If you need to separate from something, you're eating too much meat, having too much wine, it's getting a little bit out of hand, just separate from it. But you don't have to make it into a netter. Okay. So that seems to be the Torah, I think, a good short summary, but hopefully well-encompassing view of vows that, generally speaking, better to avoid them. And some situations can be praiseworthy. But that's when we go back to what the Pesukim said originally, that if it's something, let's say it requires a specific action to do it, don't delay it. And if you do, if you miss it, so that's still going to be a sin. But, so I want to clarify the difference between a neder and shvuah before we go on, because our parsha uses both of them. So a neder, technically speaking, a neder is abstaining from an object. So I think actually a good example of this, and we kind of saw this in Shulchan Aruch, a good example of this might be vegetarianism or veganism. Because if I say that I am abstaining from all meat as a neder, that's technically what a neder is forbidding an object to myself. This can also, and nedarim can also be used for hektesh, for things that go to the Beit HaMikdash. So a korban can have the status of a neder. Whereas a shvua is something that's on the person, it's specifically on the person themselves. So they say that they will do something or abstain from something. I will diet, I will learn, or I will not get angry. So a shvuah technically falls on the person. So I don't think right now we need to go so much into the details and implications. Again, two different masachtot that deals with this. But one thing that is important to note is that when it comes to nedarim, so it's kilshon b'nei adam, it's the way people speak. So on some level, even if you don't use the language of vow or swear or whatnot, so if there's an implication that you sort of mean that, even if you don't say it exactly in that language, or you don't use the exact language that's brought in the Mishnah and the Gemara, so that's something that might be relevant. So I'm not going to read through all the Pesukim here, but this is Parshat Matot, the very beginning of this week's Parsha. So first it tells us, Ish ki yidor neder l'Hashem, o hishava shvua, l'sor isar al nafsho. So somebody makes a vow, or somebody wants to make an oath to forbid something upon themselves. Lo yachel devaro, he shall not break his pledge. Kechol hayotze mipiv yaseh. Everything that comes out of his lips, he has to do. What the rest of this parsha gets into is related to women, because a woman's vows can be annulled if she's younger. If she's a katana, so they can be annulled by her father. Or if she's married, so her husband can annul them. That's a lot of the details that the rest of the psukim go into. If you want a summary, so we have the Rambam says, Kol nedarim v'shvuot ha'av mefer b'yom shama. So a father can annul vows the day that he hears them. If it's after he hears them, this is addressed explicitly in the psukim. If it's after he hears them, then he can't annul them anymore. So Rambam is saying that all vows and oaths can be annulled, provided that the father heard them the day that, provided that he annuls them the day that he heard them. When it comes to a husband, so Rambam is saying that you can only annul vows that involve some sort of inui nefesh, something that causes pain, displeasure, self-mortification is what this translation uses. Oshein bidvarim shebeina levena, or things that have to do between the two of them, right? So if she, for example, if she says, I'm making a vow not to use makeup, so he's allowed to annul that vow. So it's a little bit of discussion about whether that applies to whether that applies to the father as well. An example of like inui nefesh would be like if the Mishnah says, if a woman says that she's not going to bathe or that she's not going to have all the fruit in the world, then that would be considered inui nefesh. That's too much self-afflicting. So those a father or a husband can annul. If a woman were to say, well, I'm only abstaining from fruits from Timbuktu, but there's a fruit that's available from whatever's next to Timbuktu. So since she can acquire them, so then according to this, the husband or the father would not be able to annul. So that's what we have here. Now, just before we go any further, the difference between hafara and hatara, because we are probably very familiar with hatara sedarim. So hafara is specifically between a father and a husband. So what we're saying here about annulling them the day that's heard is only something that a father or husband can do. Whereas when we talk about regular hatara sedarim in a beit din, so that's not something that like a family member can just say, hey, disappeared. But hatara sedarim is what everybody else does in the context of beit din. So a question that comes up when it comes to hafara, when it comes to vows that a woman takes that her husband or her father might annul. So question is, are they completely retroactively annulled as if they never happened? So the Gemara says, Baal Miyakar Akar, is it completely as if it never happened? Or maybe it's just severed from this point onward, but the vows still affect until it was nullified. So if you want to know what the practical implication is, the examples that's given, this comes in Masechet Nazir. So the example given is if a woman says that she's going to make a neder to be a Nazir, which means that, again, she's abstaining from wine and the like, so that's an object. So that's considered a neder. And then a friend says, me too. So, and then the husband hears what the wife says. So if it's completely as if it never happened, so then the second woman's vow would not take effect, because it's if it's never happened. Her saying me too doesn't is also a note. But if it's just that it's from here, if it's only from the moment that the husband hears forward, so then the friend's vow would actually still stand. So we actually paskin, for what it's worth, that the vow that when it comes to hafara, that the vow is only severed from then on forward. Right, which the implication might be that, let's say, the woman makes a vow and the husband does hafara later on, which, by the way, I've never heard of anybody doing hafara sedar, but let's just say it were to happen. So the implication might be that the woman wasn't doing it before, so it might technically be a sin if she hadn't done it before the annulling. But anyway, so let's talk about hatar sedarim, which is a little bit more common. So the Mishnah Chagiga says, heter nedarim parkin ba'avir. The halachos of dissolving vows is fly in the air and have nothing to support them, right? Which means that the idea of hatar sedarim actually really isn't found in the Torah. The Torah talks about a father or husband annulling vows, but dissolving a vow for other people is something that really doesn't have a lot of basis in the Torah, right? Sort of what the Bartanura says, that there's a little bit of a hint. So what's the hint? What's the hint? So this is actually what the Tiferes Yisrael explains. The Torah says that he can't get rid of his vows. He has to do what he says. So lo yachal dvaro, his aval acher mochilo. But other people can't, so he can't dissolve his own vow, but other people can dissolve it for him. So you need a beit din, and that's where we get the idea that you need a beit din for. But otherwise, you have to, if you make a vow, you have to carry it out. Now, in order to do hatar sedarim, you need what's called a petach or a charata. Petach, charata is, let's say I made a vow out of anger. I was really, really upset. So I said, you know, really thoughtlessly, I guess this is a example that hopefully is not relatable, but I think it's telling. So if somebody gets really, really angry and they say, that's it, I'm divorcing her. So So you can have charet and say, well, I only did that out of anger, but I didn't really mean that. I didn't mean for that to go forward with it. Whereas for a petach, let's say that a petach means an opening. So let's just say that when you said it, you really didn't mean it, but you didn't realize what the implications were. So let's just say somebody gets really angry and says, I'm going to divorce her right now. But then somebody says to her, well, did you realize what the implications are for your children and their emotional world and, you know, and how this is going to, you know, how this is going to get around the community? It's like, oh, I never thought of that. So that's a petach. So the idea is if a person really fully intends the vow, so it's very hard to get out of it. But what a Beit Din would try to do is try to find some sort of petach. Well, maybe you didn't think of this scenario, which would make keeping your vow very impractical or undesirable and the like. And maybe the person will choose not to do it. So a question comes up, is dealing with hafaras or hataras adarim a mitzvah or not? So the Rambam says that it's a mitzvah to administer nullifications of vows, the implication of which being that it's not a mitzvah, it's to actually annul or nullify vows. It's just when it comes up, so a Beit Din maybe has a mitzvah to deal with it, right? We've seen things like this before, where, for example, Tuma and Tara, so you have to, you know, if a situation of Tuma and Tara comes up, so then you have to deal with halachas accordingly, right? But there's no prohibition of Tuma. Same thing with Hafaras Nedarim and Hataras Nedarim. Maybe there's no mitzvah to actually annul, but when it comes up, so you have to deal with it. Ramban says you can't count this as a mitzvah because there's no permission or prohibition involved in it. You can only count a mitzvah that says don't break Shabbos or you have to keep Shabbos, but situational mitzvahs, procedural mitzvahs, can't be counted. Which is interesting is the Rambam in his introduction to Hilchos Nedarim says that there are three mitzvahs involved in Nedarim. Number one, guard your tongue, try not to make vows that you're not going to keep. Number two, if you make a vow, you got to carry through with it. You can't just nullify it yourself. And number three is Shefer Haneder Arashvur, that an oath or a vow should be annulled. So from that, it kind of sounds like that maybe there is a mitzvah to annul vows, except that there's one version of the Rambam that adds this vav, that says Sheyufar, which again would make it sound like what the Rambam said before, that maybe there's a mitzvah for a Beit Din to deal with annulling vows if somebody wants to do it, but it's not actually technically required. If you want to go through it with it, and you're going to go through with it, so technically you're allowed to. The Sefer Mitzvah Sakata does count annulling vows as a mitzvah, but he includes some rabbinic mitzvahs, so maybe that's not such a great proof. But the Shibbol Leket brings an interesting question about making brachas on Hatar Siddur. So on Rosh Hashanah, Kol Nidre, we don't make a bracha on annulling vows. And he doesn't agree with this, where he says that annulling vows is refuah shenit natar le'ival tosha adam haregel benedar. That hataras nedarim is the vaccine for when you accidentally took the vow and you put yourself in a bad situation. But otherwise, you're not gonna make a bracha on that, which would seem to apply. Shibbol Leket does not believe that annulling vows is a mitzvah, but maybe an approach that says that annulling vows is a mitzvah would say they should make a bracha. Okay, so now with that said, let's talk about the common area of involving Hataras Nedarim, which is what we do on Erev Rosh Hashanah and Erev Yom Kippur. So it's a common thing to annul vows on Erev Rosh Hashanah. When it's described as an act of zrizus, that you don't want to start the year with loans and unpaid dues and the like. So in order to start the year clean, you want to start your year in a productive fashion, starting with a clean slate. So we have a zrizus, we make it a priority to annul any vows. Now, if I have vows that I took that I know about, so Hataras Nedarim is not necessarily going to work for that. Hataras Nedarim that we do in Rosh Hashanah is really best for vows that I might have forgotten about. Because again, you know, we have this whole, you know, the fact that the Torah has to tell us what Tzatzvatecha Tishmor, and Kohelet says, and it says what Kohelet says, tells us that people very thoughtlessly just say, I'm starting that diet, or I'm going to, you know, pay all those bills that maybe, maybe one wouldn't have gone around. And it's possible that somebody might have even forgotten. Somebody says, I am definitely going to, I'm going to call so-and-so. Well, then they forgot to call so-and-so. And by Rosh Hashanah, you definitely forgot about it. So what do you do about that? So again, we don't want to go to Rosh Hashanah like that. So for things that I've forgotten, I can do a Hatar Siddur. If there's a specific vow I have in mind that I want to get rid of, so I really should do a separate Hatar Siddur. Right? I should go in front of a Beis Din and specify it. Now for future vows, which is Rabbeinu Tam is of the opinion that you should, that when it comes to sort of Kol Nidre, so you should really only make it on future vows. And that also works, again, on the condition that if you make some sort of vow or some sort of statement in the future that you're not thinking, despite the fact that I, you know, said Kol Nidre or Hatar Siddur. So again, we're not usually thinking about Hatar Siddurim in the middle of the year when I make some sort of a vow. So Kol Nidre is effective for that. When we say Yom Kippurim Zeh Ad Yom Kippur Haba Aleinu Latova. So we're saying that perhaps if I forget in the middle of the year about Kol Nidre, so Kol Nidre can cancel those vows. But if I'm conscious of that there's such a thing as Kol Nidre and Hataras Nedarim, then it's not going to work, because it seems like I'm making the vow despite all of that. So why do we make Hataras Nedarim on Erev Rosh Hashanah and Kol Nidre? So in fact, they really serve a very similar function. And in fact, many women actually rely on Kol Nidre. They don't come on Erev Rosh Hashanah to do Hataras Nedarim, but they rely on Kol Nidre in order to annul vows. Rav Soloveitchik brings in a beautiful idea when it comes to connecting the idea of Hatar Siddurim and Tshuva, because Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is a time of Tshuva. So we talked about the two types of canceling vows, of annulling vows, Petach and Charata. So he says that these represent a certain emotional type, and they're related to Tshuva. So the petach is sort of like when I didn't realize the implications of what I was going to do. So that's something that's fundamentally an error. It was originally an intellectual misstep and an intellectual realization of what I did wrong. And that's a particular type of tshuva, that sometimes, you think about something and you realize after giving it much thought, oh, this was not the best way to do it. But let's say, but the type of charata, regret. So that's something, when we talk about regret, so regret something that's emotional, right? Almost like mourning. That he compares it to mourning, where when you're mourning, so you lost a loved one. When you're mourning a sin, it's like you lost your own soul, right? It's that feeling when you feel really, really bad, and you wish you could change it, and it's really, really eating you up. So that's charata. And he says, so the Rav says that this is kind of with Hatar Siddurim. So you have the sort of the petach way of intellectually realizing the sins I did, and the charata way where it really hits up in the kishkas. But either way, I think the idea of doing Hatar Siddurim and Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur, hopefully keeps us mindful of things related to Nedarim altogether. Because in fact, if we never ever did Hatar Siddurim, we'd probably forget the whole concept altogether. So the fact that we do it every year is probably a very good thing. We're running out of time, but I just want to touch on minhagim. Can you do Hatar Siddurim for minhagim? So if you have, let's say, a minhag, if you have a personal practice, let's say, to protect a halacha, so it's machlokes about whether you can do Hatar Siddurim about it, we generally say that you can, but you would need to do Hatar Siddurim. So let's just say that you take it on upon yourself that, for example, you're going to wait 24 hours between using meat and dairy in an oven, which some people say. So if you want to change that to a more lenient position, you might need to do Hatar Siddurim. Somebody takes on a chumrah for the sake of being pious. So somebody wants to do extra fasting. Interesting example for this week that the Shulchan Aruch brings, that somebody wants to stop eating meat on Shavuos Erev Tammuz instead of just the 9 days. So that can be broken with Hatar Siddurim and should be broken with Hatar Siddurim. Somebody wants to take on Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin and they want to stop. why we have to do Hataras Nedarim. Now, communal minhagim are much harder to break. So sometimes people say, well, why can't I just do Hataras Nedarim and get rid of the minhag of kidneys for myself? So that doesn't really work because that's a communal minhag. So you can't personally do Hataras Nedarim on something that the whole community does. And I think something about changing dairy, the wait time between dairy and meat. So there's different opinions in the Shulchan Aruch. Certain family members who know that I weigh 3, they say, well, can I change it from 5 to 3? So that's a little bit more communal family in nature. They probably ask more of a shayla, but things that are communally done are much harder to do with Hataras Nedarim. So I just want to end by saying when the Pasuk says in our Parsha, Lo Yachel Dvaro, the Pasuk in our Parsha says that one should not break their pledge. And Rashi says, Kmo Lo Yechalel Dvaro, Lo Yachel Dvaro Chulin. That person shouldn't desecrate, that they shouldn't make it mundane. And I think that's the idea here, is that we shouldn't make our words too mundane. We shouldn't take our words for granted. We should be mindful of what we promise, of what we guarantee. So if we bring it back to the original question about New Year's resolutions and the like, so of course we should resolve to do things better. And some of these nedarim, in fact, might be positive. But probably the best way to frame it is as a goal, as a potential plan to say bli neder. But perhaps best is to follow Shammai, who says, "More mad by Sarah Bay, say little and do much." That would probably be the best way to go. So it's good to try to resolve to do better. Sometimes taking the neder is warranted, but we're not sure if we're going to do it. So it's okay to take things on, but just frame it in a way that that we're not making a promise that we can't keep. Lo yachel dvaro, lo yichalel dvaro. We shouldn't throw around things haphazardly, but we should really make attention when we make promises and guarantees.